Okay, so so we're ready. I believe so.
Okay, let's start. There's Elena. Great. Okay, I'd like to welcome everyone to the December 14th, 2023 meeting of the Planning Commission's regular meeting for December. Let's see, the staff that's here it, are the staff. The commissioners that are here are Nancy, are John Barrant, Colleen Thompson, Elena Hughes, myself, Tina Carlson. Shelley's not there yet, but and our alternate as Nancy Tosta. If Shelley's, tell Shelley's here, then you'll. Okay. All right, great. The first thing on the agenda is approving the agenda for the December 14th meeting. Oh, sorry, staff being Aaron Smith and that's all I have to, and Peg Smith. Wow, Smith. Okay, so approving the agenda for December 24th, or 24th, 14th. Do I have any, can I have a second? And then we'll discuss whether we need a correction. How's that? Does that make
Yeah, I'll
sense?
second that, Elena.
Okay, so Elena, second. Does anybody have a discussion or a change in the agenda?
Yes, I would like to suggest that we table the discussion of the zoning memo. Even though I was the one who brought up the zoning issue back in July, I think we have too full an agenda tonight. Strike that item from the agenda.
I've asked Lee to do a very, very short presentation, and not there will be no discussion by the Planning Commission on how to move forward, but just so that it's on the record. So thank you. That's my preference. So anybody else have anything to add to that?
Can you,
On the
will we discuss that one further at like a work meeting or just the next meeting or?
We'll discuss that at the end of the meeting, how we want to move forward.
Okay, cool.
What dies for a lack of a second?
No, it was seconded. I just need anybody, any other opinion before or discussion
So
before.
what number is that? John just made a motion to change the agenda, but there wasn't a second on his motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh.
Oh, he made a motion. I thought that was just the discussion. I apologize.
That was, yeah, okay.
So.
I'll second it.
So John's motion has been seconded. Is there any discussion?
Quick discussion. I think Lee has done a wonderful job. I really appreciate the effort he put in. But I think that my real concern is we do have a lot of business to go through tonight. And I think that what he has is would be an excellent document to start the conversation at a focused community forum. So I'm not opposed to what he said. It's just a matter of timing tonight.
What item is that?
What the first item on the discussion on the memo that
The
he sent
matrix.
out. What's that?
The matrix
Yes.
memo. I'm fine with I feel like because I guess it's okay. Can I speak?
Yeah.
Since we have minutes behind these, we should keep them to these minutes and we should be fine. I'd be fine with leaving the agenda the way it is.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I think if we can keep it that timeline, it's fine. I'm also fine to delay it if it's not inconvenient to Lee. I don't know if Lee cares either way.
I think it's with the Planning Commission to decide on the agenda.
I call the question.
So the motion is to drop the first item on the agenda, which is Lee's presentation to.
Item number four.
I'm, no, I'm. Oh, okay. Sorry. The first actual agenda. The agenda item, Lee's Boulder Matrix memo. So if there's no further discussion, we'll have to take a vote.
Okay.
John,
Can I ask Lee, do you Do you care either way, Lee?
I don't think it's up to me to care. The commission's made a motion and you guys can proceed.
Okay, so the motion is to take Lee's Boulder Matrix memo off the agenda. So that's what we're voting on.
Colleen Thompson, no.
Was not here, so
yeah. Elena, are you going to vote now?
Yeah, sure. Elena Hughes, yes.
Nancy Tosca, yes.
John,
yes.
Tina, no. Okay. We will not be having Lee's discussion on the agenda this time. We'll talk about when we're going to readdress it in in discussion of moving forward. Okay. Can I have approval? I need approval for the minutes. Can we start with the, first of all, is there any PC member who wants to acknowledge conflict of interest in the agenda?
I'll state, as always, I have an active subdivision going on, so anytime we talk about the subdivision stuff later, that's present for me.
Okay, anyone else? All right, moving on to approve the minutes for November 9th.
I move to approve the November 9th minutes.
Yes, okay. Any comments or corrections?
I'll second that.
Oh, sorry. Second it. Sorry. Any corrections made that need to be made?
I'll let it stand as is.
Okay. And Peg, did you corrected the
things that you sent?
Okay. So I actually added something to the. No. That's fine. If everyone got those corrections in. Okay, so that was reformatting. So can I have a vote to approve the minutes for November 9th?
Colleen Thompson.
Elena, aye. Nancy Tosca, aye.
John, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. Okay, the next minutes we have is the work meeting November 30th.
I move to approve the November 30th minutes. Nancy Tosca.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any corrections that need to be made or any comments? Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I don't know if I should second that. I was going to say I wasn't at that meeting.
Okay, neither was John. So I guess it's just Elena, Elena and Nancy and I. Okay, so I'll second it. Any corrections? No, okay. All right, so the minute, can we have a vote?
Actually, the only two of you. Wait, Lena, Matt, never mind. Three of you can vote.
Yeah, so can I have a vote, please?
Nancy Tosca.
Yeah, Elena, aye.
Nick Carlson, aye. Okay, just to make sure that everybody know, at the beginning of that meeting, there was some discussion on protocol. I'm just going to move through these really quickly because I'm going to try and use them. Regular meetings will now include discussion items and action items, which have been on the on the agenda. That thumbs up is going to be used for consensus on discussions and helping us to move those discussions forward in some format or action of some kind. The chair is going to do round table, so there will be no back and forth discussion. It will just be a round table as far as each member speaks. And then let's see, I am really going to try hard to repeat the motions actually up to three times, once after it's been made a motion, after it's seconded and before the vote, and allow for, I would really like to or we discussed allowing for a reflection of pause for writing the motions down, and so that we have a bit of that clarity can happen with our motions, maybe a little better than in the past. Okay, that's it. Lee's matrix memo on zoning changes has been eliminated. We'll move on to the RV use for housing. Ah, thank you. I always do that. Sorry. Is there any public comments? Okay, Jen.
Okay. Hi, this is Jen Bach, and I am making a comment about the discussion white paper on the new Boulder land use ordinance package. As we move forward discussing attainable housing, which is in the first section there where it talks about streets, subdivision design, et cetera. It's the fourth thing down. I think it's important to note that affordable housing has a clear definition defined by actual income amounts and limits. Attainable housing is a great idea, but it's a little fuzzy as far as the definition. And we need to remember that what's attainable to me is different than what's attainable to you, different what's attainable to somebody else in town. So I feel like we need to define what attainable housing is for our purposes, or else we're perhaps just removing barriers to all types of housing, all cost levels of housing. I think going toward attainable housing for people that need attainable housing and are lower income is a really good thing. But if we remove it without any definition, we may end up in a pickle. So I just wanted to make that ahead of time so it's to be considered, please. Also, I think under the land use business regulations, adding the employee housing is a good idea. So that's on the third page near the bottom under permitted uses. So just wanted to put that out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Any other public comments? Okay, Mark.
Mark Nelson. I'm just going to reiterate on the white paper what Jen said about defining affordable housing. I've asked you to do that. Attainable housing. I've asked you to do that numerous times, and I think the whole discussion is ridiculous without a definition of that because it's just so vague and subjective. So I think that's something to be done. And another thing that bothered me about just looking over that was this removing barriers. I'm very nervous about that because I'm very nervous about the barriers part of this because, you know, somebody's barrier is maybe somebody else's firewall or regulations designed to prevent loopholes and things like that. So I'd like to know what we're talking about barriers and, you know, if it's really applicable across the boards or how that affects our general plan and ordinances in general. And then I know it's hard to ask all the questions I wanted to ask in 3 minutes, but this the thing I'm really disturbed about tonight is this whole RV thing that you're working on here. The motions, for instance, delete the 90-day limit for owner and guests to live in an RV on private property. Kind of moving towards, so what if that's not enough? I mean, you know, it seems to me that that's a dangerous direction to go, because if this is one of your barriers, you know, I'm not sure that that's, I mean, there's reasons why you limited to that, keep it for certain purposes and not for other purposes. And a 280-day limit for staying in a commercial RV park. Well, RV parks, so that's a recreational vehicle. You know, that's for recreation, that's not necessarily for housing. You know, if you want to have something like that, I think it needs to be more like a mobile home park is a difference, or have a different kind of a definition of that. I mean, to have that as, you're creating a whole different entity than, you know, an RV park. Three, Oh, yeah, the RV part for permanent housing. You know, this is for the construction period. Now, this is another area I think is very dangerous because, I mean, I think that, you know, it's good to have the ability to live in an RV while you're building a house. But if you keep stretching out a temporary use or an exception, you're just running into the problem of this becoming extended and becoming permanent. And this is one thing that we've been trying to avoid for years and years, is to avoid temporary or exceptions to become permanent. You know, now, for instance, just thinking this over, okay, so somebody buys a piece of property, they put in septic, and they have power and water and everything they need, and they're living there to build a house. They never can quite do it. They keep the house for 3 years. Maybe there's an extension of the 3 years, that's 6 years. Their property appreciates. They decide they're never going to get that house built. They sell it to another person. That person comes in, and then they start the whole process over. Well, we're just going to live in an RV for 3 years, extend for another 3 years. Now you're into it for like 12 years. I mean, I can totally see something like that happening. And so then you've got a temporary, something that was designed to be temporary becomes permanent. And this is a real thing, and Lee knows this. He's been a planner long enough. He knows about how temporary uses and exceptions can become permanent. And this is to be avoided. You know, I still support the idea of, you know, employee housing, I think that's a great idea. But here we go again. What I've also complained about before is you're not targeting things like you said you were going to target things. This is across the board. You're not really.
Got it. Okay, got that part.
You. And then on the last one, just to wind up, is, you know, to think about starting to use RVs for commercial uses. You know, come on, guys. That's not in the spirit of the general plan or what we want to see for Boulder. That's not the way we want to see Boulder. That's the way we want to have to look at every day. You know, and once you start going down that road, I don't think there's any going back, right? So, you know, I hope you're not ready to make these motions, because you need to think these things through a little bit harder, I think, about what the long-range plan is and what is the plan for the whole town, not a few individuals, because this is across the board. It's not targeted. And I probably used more than 2 minutes, so thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. Okay. Sorry, my cell phone. All right. So all right, we are now moving on to possible action items on RV for housing. I'd like to start a discussion led by Lee and Elena on this. Which of you would like to go first?
You want to see the comments up or the motions?
Comments on.
It's not on the MPAN.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, that's fine. That's good. Okay.
Yeah, if the comments are up first, Lee, do you want to talk about those and then I'll go into the motions later?
I think we should probably make sure that everyone's clear on what's proposed. And I think we should also make sure everyone understands the steps that have to happen. As I see this, Elaine and I have talked about these possibilities and what impact they have from different angles. And the only thing the Planning Commission could do tonight, if you were in fact to provide direction at all, which I hope you do, is to say, hey, let's convert these ideas into ordinance language. That ordinance language would come back to you relatively quickly, because this is not that complicated. And then you're going to have to take it out to the public and see what the public has to say. And, you know, we've had, a prelude or a preview of some of what you're going to hear from the public. There may be other opinions and angles on this as well. There may be distinctions to be made within these ideas, because that's what the motions are really at this point in time. And I I guess my hope tonight is just that the Planning Commission can say either, yes, put one or another or all of these ideas into ordinance language or not, as the case may be. And if the Planning Commission can't reach consensus on this at this moment, perhaps that's a sign that there's a lot of other work to do and it needs to simmer for a while. We know that we're going to be working, or at least we think we're going to be working on the zoning. And so this idea naturally has to come back up if it isn't possible to provide some clear direction tonight. But, you know, Elena has done a good job of laying out what I would say is a set of ideas or a proposal, and we can figure out what the Planning Commission really thinks by having you say yay, nay, or I'm just not ready to deal with that to each of these ideas. And then, like I said, you know, it goes into ordinance language and then it goes out to the public to hear what people have to say. But I think the important thing tonight, if it can happen, is for the Planning Commission to provide some definitive direction on this. We've been talking about it off and on for a long time, and it would be really good to say, okay, we're either going to do some of these things or not. Put it in ordinance language and we'll look at it and take it out to the public.
All right. Oh, yeah, this is my job. Okay. So, Elena, would you like to just start with the motions, or did we want to have
yeah.
a beforehand?
Yeah. So I guess a couple things I'd like to say about them is that I think that we all kind of agree that we want to try to see how we can have some employee housing in here and in RVs. And so I think what we just need to do tonight, like Lee said, is to just give Lee direction. None of this is going into effect immediately. So I sort of wrote them on the looser end, which is what I'm personally comfortable with and what I think would be okay. And I'm open to amendments on them. And I think that the best way to do it would be to try to come to an agreement on either each one or an amendment on each one by the time each one is done, so that Lee really knows what to be writing up for us. So I'll just start, I suppose. Should I just start making the motions, Tina, and then seconding them and discussing them?
Yeah, we'll bring those up. Okay, do you have a comment?
You want to pull them up first?
Okay, so there's some comments from the Planning Commission. Okay. So we'll start roundtable. Colleen?
So my only comment basically is on motion 3, it says to get rid of repeal 153.156. And I don't know why we, for me personally, what I want to, I know this subject is not going to be dropped necessarily. It will keep happening because of persistence. And so I feel like what we're doing needs to go before the public so that they can help us decide whether to go forward. 153, 156, I would like to see this left as it is. And the only thing I want to see changed is the 1 to 3 year. And I don't want to see it repealed, basically. And I assume that deletes 1 and 2. And that's my comment.
Okay, John.
Thank you, Colleen. You know, I think I should clarify. What I think is helpful when we have a discussion of this type is that we put a motion up and then go through a discussion of that motion, recalling that the motion is not to make a change, but rather to say, take the content of that motion and put it in ordinance language. And I think that's extremely helpful because I looked at the minutes for the last meeting. I said, how did we go for 50 minutes and have nothing in the minutes to say what we concluded? So I listened to the tape. And I realized, well, we had never come to a conclusion on any of these items. We would talk about them. And we didn't go around the table and say, do I agree or not agree? So we didn't have something that could be put in the minutes saying, 4 of the 5 commission members agreed on this point. So I think that should be the way we approach tonight's discussion, is that we take these motions as a opening discussion on that topic, deciding what we want, and then closing with a conclusion that could go in the minutes as where people stood on it. If that's helpful.
That's a thumbs up and thumbs down. On a in a regular meeting, I think that it's either we table it, we make a motion, we discuss it, and or, you know, and second it, and then we discuss it, and either it's tabled or you know, and we decide what we're going to do after that. I think that we did. We can do thumbs up and thumbs down tonight, but I'd rather that it, I mean, we don't have, this is just what I think is a way of getting some agreement on what we would do. And I'm going to say a little differently than Lee. I think that after we get this agreement, that we get it out to the public so there is more public comment before we actually maybe say, yes, now it's time for ordinances. But this is a discussion that will probably happen, hopefully, in moving forward. Nancy, did you have anything you'd like to share?
Not right now.
Okay. So can I have a motion to move through these motions?
Can I just make the first motion, you think? Does that work?
Well, I mean, are we all in agreement to go ahead with that?
Just do it.
There would be an order from Elena.
Okay. All right. I guess we're going to go through and use these as motions. And then those motions can be discussed as, and also there is amendment possibilities. So I'll try and keep track. If you're amending it at all, would you please be clear on your amendments? Nothing elaborate, please. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. So I make a motion to delete the 90-day limit for an owner or guest to live in an RV on private property.
I'm going to second it, but I think you should clarify your motion to be that we're going to discuss putting in an ordinance language, deleting the 90-day limit.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm confused.
So the motion, the correct motion will be, she's making a motion to direct,
to create ordinance language saying.
Create ordinance language deleting the 90-day limit if you consent to public hearing.
Okay, can we just agree that that's what we're doing here? And so that, okay, so I'm going to only read the motion as it is supposedly just going to be language that we agree or guidelines for ordinances. Is that what you're talking about? So that refers to all of them, okay? All right, so I am going to say that there was a motion here for deleting the 90 days limit for the owners or guests to live in an RV on private property. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, so discussion, let's do round table. Anyone want to start first?
No, the first to make the motion should get first, right?
Okay, Elena, do you want to discuss this at all?
Do I want to? Sure. Yeah, I think that the real question here that I have for people is if 90 days does not create a municipal concern, and if you already have to have hook up to water and septic, what is the problem with it being longer? Is really where I land on this one of if it's okay for 90 days, it's okay for me for it to be longer.
John, would you like to go next?
Okay, just kind of picking up on that thought, I fully agree. In discussing this, one thing that was pointed out to me was that we don't require the RV to be moved after 90 days. So in terms of the visual impact, whether somebody's actually living there for 90 days or not, or for 365 days, they still could legally have that RV parked there for that length of time. Another discussion was made that we know this is happening in Boulder. It's not causing problems. And we're not enforcing the existing ordinance. And I think anytime we have an ordinance that we aren't actually willing to enforce, we are just creating disrespect for all our ordinances. So this is also a process in this of legalizing what we know is happening. The third point is that I think RVs for an extended period of time can be very important. A seasonal worker is here for more than 90 days, but may not be in a position to build a house. They may actually pack up their RV and move it at the end of the season if they have a seasonal job elsewhere. So it's a way to have economical housing for seasonal workers. Another thing that needs to be considered is that quite often if a person buys property and puts in septic, they've already put up a lot of money. They may not have money to build a house right away, but we don't want to run them out of town by saying, well, you can't live here until you've saved up enough money to build a house. So I think there are a lot of benefits to removing this limit, and I really don't see it keeping the limit to pass the test of what municipal problem are we trying to solve, and are we solving it in an appropriate way. So I strongly support deleting the 90-day limit. That does keep in place all the other provisions of that ordinance section, which we're talking about it, that it has to meet these current standards for the type of vehicle, whether it's a motorhome or a trailer, that it has to have septic connection, can't cause noise, impacts on the adjacent properties and so forth. So those standards still are there. We're simply saying we want to delete the 90-day limit.
Thank you, John. Anyone else? Nancy?
So I guess I'm looking for clarification on some of the things that you said, Elena, and that you just said, John. And I think that the proposal here is you would delete this section of our code, 153.201A, basically. So it's a specific, I mean, that's what Lee would end up doing for us, would say, you're going to delete this as opposed to writing a different ordinance. Because that's where it goes into this detail.
Yeah, so 153.201A is two sentences, and it would be deleting that second sentence that limits it to 90 days. But it would keep the first sentence, which says any owner of real property that is located within the town limits or family member of guest of such owner may occupy as a dwelling an RV located on such property.
But then it goes on. There's a 1, 2, and 3 under A, which I was including.
Let me think.
And one of the things in there is that it does not have to be connected to sewer or water. So that assumption that you just made, John, does not seem correct. C says it can have a self-contained bathroom facility.
The rest of that would all be there. It's really just the 90-day sentence that would go away, I believe. The rest of the conditions for the RV would still be there. It's not the entire section.
So you could live, I guess one of the challenges I'm having here RVs are recreational vehicles. I mean, they're intended to be temporary dwelling units. And so the notion that they would somehow become a permanent dwelling unit is challenging to me. I guess I'm trying to figure out what that would imply. John, your point about seasonal workers need housing, I totally agree with that. And we know that's been an issue. And perhaps we put a longer period of time that would accommodate seasonal workers to be able to live in a home that they brought with them, in some cases connected to septic perhaps, or in other cases, a self-contained bathroom. So that would be another option here to simply saying, we're not gonna have any limit on how long a temporary dwelling such as an RV could be used for living. So I'm sorry, I'm just throwing out some ideas here. And then John, you made a statement about, we know this is happening and it's extensive. I guess I don't know that. I mean, do we have data that tells us that there are a lot of people living permanently in RVs? So I'm just wondering if that really is pervasive. I know there are a lot of RVs. I see RVs parked on a lot of property, but they look like RVs. I mean, they're not necessarily people permanently living in them. So the idea that because we're not enforcing what we currently have in our code, we should change our code. I guess I'm trying to understand that logic, because I don't know that for a fact. So, so those are just some preliminary comments. I'm trying to figure out how we make this work in a way that meets the needs of the community, the general plan, as well as understanding the limits we have in available housing, particularly for seasonal workers.
Thanks.
I will make a comment unless someone else would like to. This particular issue also came up when people started putting a yurt in town. And that, I'm not sure how it got resolved, but we still have at least one yurt that I know of, and they've come and gone. Colleen talked about tiny homes as being maybe something that we should consider being more applicable for short term or just interim housing. So those are other things that we could actually think about. I too am a little concerned about an indefinite length of time that an RV can be used as an actual residence. I don't even know the definition of an RV exactly, but usually they're travel trailers of some kind. We do have mobile homes in town. I think that, but I do think that the time length should be considered lot longer than what we've had. I know that Gladys has people who stay maybe longer than 90 days or have in the past. So in that, and it really does depend on the RV owner to decide how and how many he or she would like to have, because it is a completely different type, as Mark said, situation. And it for an RV park, I think it would be difficult to have long-term rentals with no ending dates, or I would imagine. But so anyway, that's my comments. So I'm gonna start. Go ahead.
Yeah, Colleen, you have a chance to speak.
But I did. So the problem that I have with this motion is that there's not a reference to it like the other one does. We're sitting here looking, and I wished I would have brought my own copy of 153.201. And it doesn't say in this motion that all it entails is a part of A. And so I don't agree. And so that's my comment as far as motion one and motion two is we don't. I just don't think they're complete enough.
Okay, and this is also the. Oh, sorry, Elena, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for clarity, again, we're not changing the ordinance language right now, so we're really just talking about what we think conceptually about getting rid of that limit. The language and what's around it will be addressed when Lee works on the ordinance language. So it's not an actual ordinance change right now. We're just talking about this in concept or theory, and if we're okay with this as a practice, if that helps.
If I may hop in, we're really just talking about whether you want to consider this.
Yeah.
Right. In ordinance form. And I think, there are assumptions that can be made about the way this reads in the ordinance. But I don't want to be we need to keep this conceptual so that if I come back to you and say, hey, look, you know, item J, there isn't a J here, so we'll just talk about J, you know, or item J3B or whatever, is not going to work well with the change. I have to have the freedom at this point in time to try to make the whole thing coherent. But there just isn't any use of my, we've gone through a lot of things that I brought you guys that went nowhere. And we just can't keep working without the Planning Commission providing a conceptual direction and saying, okay, bring this back to us. It's something we truly do want to consider. And to me, that's the question you ought to be asking yourself. If you think, hey, I'm not willing to change this in any significant way, then you're going to vote no on the motion. If you're willing to consider it, then you're going to say, sure, bring us something to look at and we'll see. And that way, I at least have some expectation that the Planning Commission is ready to think this through and make a decision on it rather than letting things be discussed and fritter off into the ether as they sometimes do. There is an assumption, I think, in both what Elena and I have discussed and what John has said, that we're talking about an RV that's hooked to a working on-site wastewater disposal system. And that's the assumption I'm going to take into it, which would mean there's either a change or a clarification in 153.201. Not a biggie. But honestly, you know, does this make sense? We can't, if we keep getting tangled in the existing ordinance language, then we can do this until, what's the proverbial thing, till the cows come home. We need to have a concept that you guys think is worth considering. We need to bring language back, and you need to act on it, knowing full well that, hey, if the language needs to be tweaked, it's easy to tweak language once you're in agreement about the concept. So, you know, let's see if we can get some direction on this, as opposed to tinkering with the existing language.
Okay, John.
Okay, I think this is my second, I'm starting the second round here. Respond to a couple of things. Nancy, and I guess this is almost a conflict of interest. I have an extra septic hookup and power hookup on my property. I've had people ask whether they could park their trailer there for the season. I have not taken anyone up on it, but there are many. But those opportunities are there. There are people who have expressed an interest in using a trailer for housing for the tourist season. You ask, do we have an inventory of it? No, because we're not taking enforcement. And the only way to enforce would be to start knocking on the door at the middle of the night and say, hey, are you living here? And do that 91 times and say, oh, you're here too long. So, I mean, enforcement's really awkward if you in these situations. And again, if it's not causing a problem, why would we be trying to enforce an ordinance to force somebody to leave if they are, if they're keeping the site clean, they're not causing the neighbors problems, they're not discharging sewage? What's the problem with their being in the trailer versus just parking it there? So that's why we don't have an inventory of that. Tina, I did want to mention, you had put three nice points there in your agenda memo. You know, that show that allowing long-term living in an RV on private property is not inconsistent with state law. It's not something unusual. It's something that's regulated at the municipal level. I'll also remark that Moab has now developed what they call their alternative housing ordinance, addressing exactly this sort of thing. So we're not doing something unusual. And I guess it gets back to the nature and flavor of Boulder, that it's been a very informal town. We've tended to allow these things. It actually gives their town its character. And we should realize this is not a
this is not putting somebody living in a trailer in the middle of downtown Salt Lake City. It's a very different situation. So but I did want to remind people, you had pointed out that this is really not inconsistent with practice elsewhere. I guess my fourth point is, remember, RVs are a whole spectrum. They can be something as small as a sheep herder trailer. On the other hand, there are parks, especially down in Arizona, where people drive their $250,000, $300,000 motorhome and park it and live there 6 months. And then they go and drive to another RV park somewhere else in the country and live for 6 months. And I am aware of at least one park where people even lease their sites year to year because they plan to be there for 6 months or 8 months a year and come back the next year. But those things are as expensive as a small house and certainly are designed for long-term living. The IRS allows you to use a mobile home as your tax residence. So, you know, there's...
You said mobile home.
An RV.
Or motorhome.
Motorhome, excuse me, yeah. A motorhome can be used as your tax residence. So, you know, there's a whole spectrum, and our ordinance makes no distinction. So, you know, if there's a type of camping vehicle that is causing a specific problem, I'd be really open to putting a specific restriction on it. But again, we should tie it to what municipal problem are we trying to solve by making this restriction on private property rights.
Thank you, John. Anyone else? Go ahead, Nancy.
I was going to offer an amendment to the motion in the interest of finding maybe some compromise here and giving Lee some direction. So I'll make, I move to amend motion one to say delete the 90-day limit and substitute 180-day limit for an owner or guest to live in an RV on private property.
Okay, the motion, the amendment to the motion is 180 days limit for an owner or guest to live in an RV on private property.
You can say that one more time for the mic. Okay. The amendment is to erase 90 days, to extend the 90 day, to limit,
to delete the 90 days and substitute 180 days, basically.
As a limit.
As a limit. And I can talk to the motion if there's a second, but if there's not a second, then I won't say any more about it.
I'll second that, Elena.
There's no second.
Elena just seconded.
Did you second it?
Elena seconded. Yeah,
Elena seconded.
So it's been moved and seconded that the first motion, number one, will be eliminate 90 days. To delete the 90 days and limit time in an RV to 180 days for an owner or guest to live in an RV on private property.
And may I speak to the motion?
Okay, so this is discussion.
We've had a lot of discussion about seasonal employment, and you know, this provides 6 months. If someone needed a place to stay. So it gives just more options, doesn't force them to try to move their RV and go someplace else if you know they're working longer than the 90-day period. So I'm trying to find some middle ground here that would provide you know some way for us to accommodate some of the concerns about not having employee housing. But at the same time, you know, address some of the other concerns that it not become permanent housing. And I do think at some point we have to have a discussion on what's the difference between a recreational vehicle and a mobile home. Because I do think there are differences in how they're insulated, you know, what sort of power infrastructure they have, what sort of septic, and we will have to make some other changes in this ordinance, obviously, if the requirement will be that these are connected to septic and water, because that's not what our ordinance says right now. But that was the reason for my suggestion to give us a little different parameter here, that 90 days is too short, but perhaps 180 is enough.
Okay, John?
Okay. Two things. One is, if you count the months, our tourist season is more like 8 months, not six
yes.
months. So 180 days would not be enough. But even if you made it 270 days, I am going to have to challenge you to say what municipal problem is living it in it for 180 days causing that does not is not a problem if the person lives there the full year, and how, and then indirectly, how are we going to know and enforce this? So I would be opposed if I think we should just, I still argue we should just drop the time limit, because we haven't really identified a municipal problem. One thing I know, ordinance, it uses bad wording. It says it should be capable of locomotion. It should have been capable of being moved. But there's the distinction between a mobile home, which is nowadays built to HUD standards and on a permanent foundation, and an RV is that RV has wheels. It can be moved. But I just focus on what municipal problem are we solving by restricting private property rights with this ordinance?
And can I just say that this actual motion is for RVs on private property, which we have an ordinance that says a year is a possibility for that. This is mute. The amendment, I mean, you know, as far as this particular spot. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. For me, I could be open to like a time compromise. I think that 180 days is too short, just the length of the tourist season, and then that not giving anyone any buffer on the outside either. I think 1 or 3 years is much more reasonable. But I also do end up landing, obviously, I think, from the original motion, where John does also have. I can't understand if the only concern about having people in RVs for a long time is the way they look, or if there's actually a municipal concern associated with that, other than people just not wanting to see them, which for me personally isn't a good enough reason to not have people have a place to live.
Can I help in here?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Lee?
Okay. First, I just want to reaffirm what John said, that there's a clear definitional difference between mobile homes and RVs, both in federal and state law. And the reality is that they have to comply with different construction codes. So that definition is easy. It's already done for us, and there is no use of Boulder inventing something different. I guess that I want to point out that, you know, we still have three motions, and we've been way more than 20 minutes. But if you think about allowing, setting aside the RV park motion, which is a little different animal, if you're going to allow a person to have an RV while they're building a home, is it fair to say, well, if you're not building a home, you have to stay in your RV for a shorter period of time? I know we're talking about the level of investment here, but reality is that if we require that it's connected to an approved wastewater disposal system, people will have made a very substantial investment, right? And so I think that, I mean, time is certainly an important part of this conversation, but the conditions under which this is done are equally important. And if people, if the concern is that people who live in RVs are going to pack up and leave, well, They could, but if we say, look, you can have this as an indefinite term, if you're connected to an approved wastewater disposal system, then we're saying that people have invested, what, at least $20,000 into the construction of that system to hook the RV to. And so I think that, you know, that's, and I'm edging towards the final thing here, which is John's question, which Elena has also repeated, what's the municipal issue? I've been doing this for 50 years, and I can tell you what the issue always is, and we may as well just name it and call it out. The issue is that people are concerned that having RVs used as residences in their neighborhood will result in a diminution of their property values. That's what the conversation always ends up boiling down to. I don't know that that's true in Boulder, given the nature and character of Boulder at this moment. I will also point out to you that in a subdivision, the subdivider and ultimately the residents who inherit the rules that the subdivider creates can rule out the use of an RV, right? They have the private ability to say, hey, in the covenants, there's no RVs. And so there is the ability, if you think that's important, for people to make a distinction between one subdivision and somewhere else in the community. But I don't think we should think there's a mystery about why people are concerned about RVs in their neighborhood. The concern is about property values. There may be something of a concern about visuals and so on, but in the end, it boils down to property values. And I think that the way to take this out to the public, because again, that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about making a decision. Way to take this out to the public is to say, okay, if somebody is willing to make a reasonable investment in living this way, which is to say they're willing to construct an approved wastewater disposal system or to connect to an existing approved one, which exists in a few cases, like John was describing with his property, then we're asking people to make an investment in being there. And we need to go out to the public and say, is that enough? To me, that's the rest of the conditions that are here are all easily satisfied and make, except in extreme cases, they make relatively little difference. So I think we need to get this up to the point where the public can have a discussion about this that's honest, that says, okay, this is a way to satisfy some housing needs. We're going to require people to make something of investment to do that. And, you know, what do you think the impact on adjoining properties is? That's really the question. And let the public hash that out. But we need to give them a clear statement of policy on which to base that discussion. And I think that's where we're at. But if I was a member, I'd call the question and see people where people are at, because we've been at this for a long time without adding a whole lot of new information.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So we have an amendment on this cross out 90 and limit use for 180 days. It's been moved and second. I need a vote.
Colleen Thompson, no.
Elena, no.
John, no.
Nancy Tosti, yes.
Tina, no. Okay, that's passed. Can we go back to the original, which is eliminating the 90 days for the owner or guest to live in an RV on private ground, including whatever regulations that we, well, septic and anyway, that's the motion. So,
can I clarify something on the motion?
Mm-hmm.
What you just said and what Lee said isn't in the motion, that it has to require septic. So
that
we need to make
amendment.
An amendment to the motion that says, so I offer an amendment on the motion that says any RV on private property has to be connected to water and septic.
I will second that.
I think it's unnecessary because it's already in the ordinance, but I guess it's fine to put it again. So, yeah.
So I'm good with it. It's been amended to include paths to be connected to water and septic.
Can I have so discussion or if I could speak to the motion just a bit? And just to clarify, Elena, it's not in the ordinance. You have a choice. And one of the choices is you can be self-contained. So it's a 1, 2, or 3 choice here you need to comply with. So we'd have to change the ordinance to say explicitly that if you are going to live in an RV, it has to be connected to septic and water. Just to clarify that. So we would have to delete some of these other aspects of this ordinance, current ordinance.
Thank you, Nancy.
Yeah, and again, the overall motion is that we are simply providing guidance for preparation of ordinance language. I think that's excellent. Without using names, a former planning commission member did live in an RV for a long time that was self-contained. He said it was very difficult to go even a week. So that option really isn't very practical. So I would say yes. Let's say if somebody's going to stay there for an extended period, they have to be hooked up to the water septic.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yep.
Okay, so the amendment, do we have to vote on the amendment first? Yeah, so the amendment is that the RV needs to be connected to water and septic. Can I have a vote?
Nancy, Dana, yes. Sorry.
Nancy, I. Lena, I.
John, I.
Pauline, I. Tina, I. Okay. So the full motion is to delete the 90 days limit for the owner or guest to live in an RV on private property has to be connected to water and septic. Can I ask? No. Can I have a vote?
John,
Elena,
I.
Yes.
Is there any more discussion? I guess that's so. Second, John seconds it. Is there any more? Does this need any more discussion? Anybody have any other? Okay, so.
Call the question.
So, I would like to have a vote now. If there's no other discussion. Okay, can I have a vote?
John, I.
Colleen, Dana. I. Nancy, no. Tina Carlson, I. Okay, so this is a conceptual guideline for Lee to come up with ordinance plans. The next one is delete the 90-day limit for staying in commercial RV parks. A 180-day limit staying in national parks in an RV park.
What section did this come from?
I'm moving on.
Okay, I'll second that motion to this open discussion on motion 2.
Well, who first did? Who made the motion?
I guess I did. Unbeknownst. But okay, so it's up for discussion.
So the first thing, so is this it? So I'd like to see where this is. Can we bring this up
again? Motion to delete 180 day limit for staying in commercial RV park.
But the thing that I want to know is just like the other one, we were talking about one sentence in a whole section. So I'm wondering what section this is and what it's attached to, if we can see that. That's all. That's so what I'm asking. Yeah, where is it in the code? Because so I want to see what it's attached to.
It's 153.430G. And again, we're not just deleting things. We're letting Lee know if we're okay with just this 180-day part. He's not going to take out anything that leaves the town in jeopardy. or takes out a health concern. So whatever's attached to it, Lee will work on that when he does the ordinances to keep us safe on that. I trust that.
And this is a really easy one to separate. It really doesn't interact in the same way with the other parts of the standards for RV parks. This one is a very simple change to make.
So, and I put this one in because it was so popular at our last discussion. People seem to be fine with leaving it up to the, basically what it would do is it would leave it up to the commercial RV park owner to set the time limit. So just because we say 180 days is fine doesn't mean that that would actually happen, because the RV park owner could say that only 80 days is fine for them. It's just allowing them to.
Okay, any other comments?
Kind of repeating what I said earlier, the 180 days is inaccurate, is less than the full tourist season. And again, what municipal problem are we solving by restricting our RV parks owner's ability to run the business the way he chooses?
Are you making an amendment to that motion then?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Any other comments? Okay, I will take a vote. The vote is to delete the 180 day limit for staying in a commercial RV park.
John, aye.
Elaine, aye.
Nancy Tosta, aye.
Elena, you said aye. Tina,
yeah.
Carlson. Okay. All right. The motion has passed for deleting the 180 day limit for staying in a commercial RV park. Okay, the third one.
I think, you know, can I say something about this next one?
Sure.
I think that we could actually skip this one in the interest of time, because Lee and I can just talk about it. It's basically just adjusting another ordinance language to adjust for the first one, and Lee and I can just talk about that and make sure that that happens. If that works.
Yeah.
Okay, can we agree that we could? Okay. Thank you, Lee. Okay, and then the last one is allowing RVs as accessory dwellings in existing or future commercial uses, allowing the access accessory dwelling to be on the same property as a commercial use or on another property of the owner of that commercial use. Sorry, can't follow my notes because I didn't have room to put it all in there. And I think it's slightly different, but Elena, it was a little difficult to read the, but that's basically it. Is that correct, Elena, on your motion, or do you want?
Yeah. And this just came from Lee's document to us a couple weeks ago, and we all seemed to, I think, agree on this one. So I just kind of copied it from there to make sure. And then Lee can move forward on that one if we all still agree.
So this is use of RVs on commercial use property.
I will second that.
Okay, discussion? Any discussion on this?
Elena, do you want to go first or?
Unless anyone has any concerns, I don't really have anything I need to say, but I can address concerns if people have them.
All right. Okay, the reason this one was in there is in part because the section of the code affected by motion one has owner or guest on a non-commercial basis. So this fourth motion, which or motion number four, allows it where you're having an employee and you could possibly be charging rent. So it's a little bit different, and it's a different decision for the town. The first one was non-commercial. This is commercial use. This specifically would be vital for the school project. But it also, we had an issue a couple of years ago where there was a trailer on the property by the corner, and somebody was concerned about, well, is somebody living in there? And it actually got to even somebody from enforcement going over and talking to the owners. And my feeling at the time was, why is that a concern if somebody's living in the trailer and you're not even sure somebody's living in there? What's making this a concern? We should really be encouraging this because it's creating employee housing where it's needed. So I strongly, strongly support this to take this to ordinance language and public comment.
Anyone else?
Does anyone have any concerns about it, or should we just go ahead and vote on it?
All the questions.
Nancy, go ahead.
I guess that I'm okay with the general premise of it until the on another parcel, which may not be a commercial parcel, right? Could be someplace else. I mean, this relates to one and what we're going to do with one. I mean, so it could just be parcel somewhere completely different rather than, and it becomes an accessory dwelling unit. I'm uncomfortable calling RVs accessory dwelling units, I guess, because I think that gets into a whole other issue about what ADUs are and what kinds of requirements we might have for ADUs. And I don't know how to resolve that. Can we allow an RV to be a dwelling to support a commercial use? Yes, that's different than calling an RV an accessory dwelling unit. So
there's a clear distinction in law. State law says that it has to be on a purely residential premise to be an ADU. So state law has answered this question.
But why does this motion say allow RVs as an ADU?
It doesn't say ADU, it says accessory dwelling, and there's a difference between an accessory dwelling and an ADU in the code, because we have commercial. This should say that it's a accessory dwelling. I mean, to be absolutely clear, it should say it's an accessory dwelling to a commercial use. And then that would eliminate, that would navigate the difference between it and ADU. So there should be, I think you're right, there should be a clarification here that this is not an ADU as it's treated by what the state required the town to do. This is an accessory dwelling to a commercial use. And the town was not required by the state to do anything about that. This is a separate matter and issue, and it probably is not precisely, it is not precisely clear here, but it's easy to clarify.
I will make a motion for an amendment to allow Lee to clear up that language with regard to accessory dwelling and make it clear that the intent is employee housing. If that's right. Consistent. Okay, so my motion is that we, in giving guidance to Lee to write ordinance language, we replace the word accessory dwelling with something that makes it clear it's employee housing incidental to a commercial use.
We can do that.
Second that amendment.
That's an amendment. Can I add to that can I add to that amendment? I'd like to add to that amendment that, okay, first my comment is that I think we're going to get into some interesting situations with the owner of the commercial use developing something on other property that's not commercial, and that it should be commercial use. This is specifically for commercial property. This amendment, and not like if an owner has another piece of property somewhere, they can set it up so that they have. I think it's the numbers that I'm wondering. how many RVs on a commercial property can there be? I guess. And then is that commercial property? If the owner has property, other property, is that commercial property, or is that just, you know, their property?
Right. So, this is already in the code. The only thing we're talking about here is whether you can use an RV to do it.
Right, on commercial property.
on commercial or on another parcel owned by the owner.
Really?
That's in the commercial development standards.
Okay.
So.
All right. Never mind.
All that this is doing, and it probably could be clarified, and I can clarify it in sync with all the direction we've received here. We should be calling it employee housing probably rather than accessory dwellings. But yeah, the only change here would be to make it clear that an RV can be used for that purpose. And you also have to remember that in this case, the Planning Commission is issuing a conditional use permit that covers this so that you have the ability to condition it in whatever way is consistent with the code. So this is a little different than item one that allows people to just do it. And they're going to end up overlapping conceivably. I got to think about that. But the idea that an employer can house employees is already embodied in the code. The only thing we're clarifying here or not is whether they can use RVs to do it.
Okay. Did I get a second on my motion to change the wording to employee housing? I think Elena seconded that.
Yep.
Okay, so the motion then reads, give Lee directions to allow RVs as employee dwellings in existing and future commercial uses, and allow that employee dwellings be on the same property as the commercial use or another property owned by the commercial owner.
Since we're doing an exemplary job of following Robert's rules tonight, let's vote on the amendment and then we'll vote on the motion.
Okay, so the amendment is to, instead of accessory dwellings, be employed?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I have a motion to approve that?
You've got a vote.
Can I have a vote? Sorry.
John, aye.
Elena, aye.
Nancy, aye.
Colleen, aye. Tina, aye. Okay, so then we have the full motion is to allow RVs as employee dwellings in existing and future commercial uses, allowing employee dwellings to be on the same property as the commercial use or on another property owned by the owner.
So I'd like to make an amendment.
Okay.
I'd like to move to eliminate that last line. So employee housing would be on the commercial property and delete or another parcel owned by the owner of the commercial.
Okay. Use. John, so I guess that would be rewriting what we have in ordinance now to allow for that. Is that so? Okay.
Sounds like we're rewriting.
Okay. Okay. So the motion is to eliminate the ability to have an RV for employee housing on another property that the other than commercial use, correct? Something like that. Okay, can I have a second? Well, I'll second that. Okay, so now can we have a vote on the excluding having RVs as employee housing on the property of an owner, the property other than a commercial use property.
Nancy, aye.
We should debate first.
Nobody. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, all right. So I can see a concern, and ultimately there is another direction. You were saying you didn't see how to reconcile it. At some point in time, we could, as an alternative to this, we could consider supplementing the current RV park standards with some different rules that would specifically apply to employee housing RV parks, where it's long-term stay and it's not transient occupancy and so forth. However, I would get back to the same thing, that what's the harm if the owner, for example, of the business puts a RV on their property and wants to charge their employee rent to live in it.
As an accessory dwelling.
Well, as employee housing. What's the difference between that and, so that's true. Well, if it's a built, if it's a permanent structure, that's an ADU, and that's a whole different section of the code, as Lee points out. So I'm getting back to the same thing. If the owner of a business wants to put a trailer somewhere on their property, and charge the employee rent to live in it, what harm is that causing that we're needing to address as a municipal concern? I think there is language in there somewhere, and we should make sure Lee picks it up, that there's a limit of two RVs on the property, so there can't be a proliferation. So I'm back to what problem are we solving by restricting it to only being on the commercial property?
Can I respond to that, Tina?
Sure.
I can't say I know exactly what problem we're trying to solve, but I'm wondering why planning commissions and town council before us chose to have these ordinances. I mean, at some point there was a reason for putting these in place, whether it was to comply with our general plan or there were other concerns. So, I mean, we are tweaking them now, but I think we need to be careful about how we tweak them, because there was a reason why they were passed originally. So that's, I don't know the exact reason, but that's what I would say to you, John, that, we have them in our ordinances, so there must have been some rationale for putting them there.
Yeah.
Okay, so any other comments on this amendment?
Yeah, just quickly. I guess I just want to give some examples of businesses in town and that could potentially, that this could be beneficial to. Like, this isn't to say that any of them would do it. I want to use Magnolia's as an example, especially because it's gone, so it doesn't really matter. But had Haley and Garen owned a place in Boulder and had Magnolia's, it might not actually make sense for someone to have an RV over there at the museum. It might not work for the museum for them to have it there, but they live down the road and could have their employee live there. Same thing with Hills and Hollows. The Owens own that whole other big place. It might make more sense for them to have an employee down there than somewhere parked up at Hills, which is already has a lot of parking issues sometimes. Same thing with Wild Indigo. Not all the businesses, just the properties just don't necessarily make sense to have housing on it. But if the owner has something else where it can make sense and has the water hookup and stuff, I think it could help. I think it could help out. And it could be that no one uses this because no one has the opportunity to, but I don't see a problem with it. And I see it potentially providing a solution. So that's 10.
Anybody else? Okay, let's have a vote on the amendment is to eliminate other properties owned by the commercial use, owned by the owner who has the commercial use permit to have employee housing on that property. And I have a vote.
John, no on the amendment.
Elena, no.
Nancy, aye.
Pauline, aye.
No. Okay, let's remind everyone this is going to be reviewed once Lee puts it together and it will be addressed again. So let's just see what happens. We need the vote on allowing RVs as employee dwellings in existing employee and in existing and in future commercial uses, allowing employee dwellings to be on the same property as the commercial use and on other properties being owned by that employer or commercial employer. Anyway, does that make sense? Not quite exact, but Okay, can I have a vote, please?
Okay, John, aye.
Colleen, aye.
Elena, aye.
Nancy, aye. Tina, aye. Okay, right. Okay, it's 7:30, and I'm sorry, we're going to try and make this. Okay, if there's no objection, we are asked to have a 5-minute recess. Okay, 5 minutes.
Hey, Tina.
Yes.
I just want to remind Shelly. It's still okay, though, because there's enough of you there, right?
Right. Yes, that's fine. Thanks, Elena. I really appreciate you being here. Okay, road access. This has gone through there. If I would like to have, I hope that we are all ready to say yay or nay as what Nancy has in here. General guidelines for access. I would encourage, I hope that we can decide whether any of the yellow that Nancy has put in here can be approved along with the rest. I guess that's my first feeling. Again, this is conceptual direction for Lee to make ordinances, and if we want to add anything to this, we can do that. So I'm sorry, I'm trying to get it up.
In terms of the agenda, Tina, you just skipped the possible PC steps forward. The order of the agenda that's online is to discuss the steps forward before this road discussion. I don't know that I agree with that, but that's the way it is on the agenda.
No, it's not.
It's the way the agenda is online.
Oh, well, I'm going to go with the one I sent in, which had the roads first.
Okay. Which one did we approve at the beginning of the meeting?
Okay, so roads will be not probably discussed tonight if we're going to go forward with how we're going to move forward on this agenda, on all these things.
I'm going to make a motion to amend the agenda to move the road discussion out.
Second.
Sorry, I couldn't hear that. Could you repeat that into the mic?
So I made a motion to move the road discussion up and amend the agenda to move the road discussion up, and Nancy seconded that.
Okay.
So can I have a vote or do I need any discussion? Okay. Go ahead.
John, aye.
Colleen, aye.
Nancy, aye. Okay. Tina, aye. Okay. So we're going to do the road access standards discussion, concept direction for Lee to do an ordinance language for us to review. Okay, is that clear? Go ahead.
Okay, so, and once again, this is really part of the whole subdivision ordinance revision package. And there's that old saying, how do you eat a whale? One bite at a time. This is one small bite of that whole subdivision ordinance rewrite. But this would get us started on the road access standards. I think that this is an excellent document. Given that it is providing guidance, we've had a whole work meeting on it. Nancy's done an excellent job summarizing the past discussions. I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the entire 16 points as guidance to Lee for moving forward.
I'll second that, Colleen Thompson.
Any discussion? Oh, okay. Under pressure, here we go. Let's see, can I have a vote?
Oh, sorry. The motion was to accept the entirety, including the yellow. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Of the the 12, 16 points for concept points for Lee to move forward in motion for ordinance language.
And to be clarified, that is going to be the November 28th version of your document, Nancy?
It's the 1207, it's the December 7th version.
Draft December 1207.
Yeah, that summarizes the November 28th discussion. Yeah.
Okay, are we ready for a vote?
John, aye.
Colleen, aye. Nancy, aye.
Tina, aye.
Aye.
Okay, wow, okay.
Good job, guys.
John?
Hey,
John. Uh-huh. You're going to take off too, John, but Lee?
You're just, you're on mute.
May I make a request?
Sure.
Some of these are quite specific and not very hard to interpret. Others are not as specific. And I am wondering if the Planning Commission would like to have a subcommittee of either one or two of you who are interested in this, with whom I could communicate about those that I find to be not quite as specific. And say, hey, which way do you want to go on this? I think that would facilitate the discussion when we get to everybody looking at the whole thing. I mean, some of these overlap, and the overlap is certainly not an issue. But there are some things here that are not perfectly clear, shall we say. And I am wondering if you certainly don't have to do this. I will simply forge ahead if you don't want to, but I think it might be nice to say about 2/3 of the way between now and the next meeting, I could call on a couple of the Planning Commission members. I could send them a draft, and with that draft, some questions, and see if I can get some opinions that lead us to a more complete draft. Is that a reasonable request?
Yeah.
Go ahead, John.
Thank you, Lee. Nancy and I have discussed exactly that. I am on the Planning Commission till the 31st. So I would be very willing to work between now and the end of the year with Nancy on getting some specifics on these things.
Okay, here's the reality, which is that I will be gone from Saturday through the 2nd of January. And I will not take this up until the 3rd or 4th of January. So I don't see why John could not continue. For one thing, that the Planning Commission has the ability, and I think you should remember this, if you create a committee, you don't have to have it be a commission member. You can add a member of the public to your committees. And so there's no reason John could not continue to serve in that capacity. But just as a matter of timing, it would be my intention to get this out to people the first week of January, because I will be on the road and will not have this done. I may think about it, but I will not have it done until early January. So take that into account. I welcome John and Nancy, you know, and like I said, I see no objection to John continuing in that role for a couple of extra days. But if you guys aren't comfortable with that, then you need to make a different decision.
Lee, I'm happy to review it. I will actually be out of the country from the 31st until the end of January. So, but I will be capable of reading, I believe I'll be capable of reading documents and probably doing Zoom at different points in time. So,
right. Well, we all have our issues about timing and travel, particularly at this time of year. But I don't want to come back to the full commission guessing on some things if I can get a couple of opinions. Okay. That's my request.
I'm willing. Okay, sure. And if there's anybody who turns up not being willing to or able to do this, I'm sure Colleen or I can step in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Briefly.
Okay, thank you.
Maria and Nancy, I thought it was a great paper.
Okay.
So, yeah. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. So are we saying goodbye to you and Elena?
I would like to be here for the beginning of the next discussion because I have a couple of things I would like to say to the commission about moving forward. And then I will depart and let you have your discussion moving forward without me. But if it's acceptable to the commission and to you, Madam Chairman, I did spend some time after our conversation this morning thinking about this, and I have a handful of slides that I think clarify the relationship of the pieces of this puzzle. I would like to just present those very briefly, and then I will depart and let you all go from there, if that's acceptable.
Do I have agreement with the planning commission?
Yeah.
Okay. So, John, are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So is it okay for us to not take a break and just go for this? Have Lee. So if Lee, go ahead and. Okay. You okay?
Let me see if I can share my screen here. That'll take me a second to be ready to share the screen. And let's see, here we go. There we go. Share screen. Okay, let's see, share. All righty. Let me get this into slideshow mode. Slideshow from the beginning. This will be brief. But as you move ahead, and I'm just going to say what I have to say here and then leave the meeting and let you move ahead. But I see some frustration and perhaps some anxiety about trying to get everything done and the load that is hoisted onto the Planning Commission, in part by the state legislature. And I want you to think, as you have this conversation about your goals, is the goal to implement the general plan or, and I guess I just have to say this straight out, if a lot of third parties watching the commission might say that the goal has really been to avoid controversy. And I'll just let that hang there and let you all deal with it and dive into my view of the new subdivision law and what has to be done. The new subdivision law simply renders Chapter 152 of the Town Code irrelevant. And there's no use of referring. It wasn't a great chapter anyway, as many of us have found contradictions and other issues in it. It's irrelevant now, and that's good. The new state law forces all the big picture questions into the zoning. And all of this, I will say, everything I'm saying here, I said to you all in a white paper that PEG distributed to you on October 17th. So this is not exactly new, but I want to have it in your minds as you go forward with this next discussion. For the new Chapter 152, or whatever number it ends up being, there's four major things that have to happen. There's a statement of purpose and authority, which is easy. There are procedures. 90% plus of those procedures are dictated by a very micromanaging state legislature. There is nothing to discuss, or virtually nothing to discuss. Beyond that, there are engineering standards. The wildfire code is already adopted. The water supply are standards written by either Southwest District Health or the state. Wastewater disposal, the same. Stormwater management, at a certain point, the state steps in. Platting and recording are the state surveying guidelines that John has introduced into our conversations several months ago. Impact on irrigation is the responsibility of the irrigation provider to communicate with the town. The only thing that is truly the town's out of these standards is what we just talked about and what we're already working on, which is roads, streets, access, whatever you want to call it. Beyond that, and most important, if you're going to implement the general plan, is that the subdivision has to comply with the zoning. And what that means is that everything else besides those standards that I just listed has to be in the zoning. That includes the density and the design of subdivisions. It includes open space protection. It includes attainable or affordable housing. It includes compatibility with the neighbors and any other issues that come bubbling up. I think those cover a lot of it, but whatever other issues come up about a subdivision, they've all got to be addressed in the zoning. And so I will repeat, there really is almost nothing to discuss because the procedures are spelled out in statute. We just have to come up with our version of that. You got to finish the work on the access, and you made great progress on that. We're going to get there on access. There may be some debates and some discussions, but you're doing a good job of moving ahead with that. You could decide to adopt some standards for water or wastewater or whatever that are stricter than the states. I don't think you're going to do that, and I wouldn't recommend because I don't see how the town could implement it. The most important thing is not about the ordinances or about that statute per se. It's about how you and the town council can support the zoning administrator, who is going to have to bear the burden of administering everything under the new state law. So again, you're back to what are your goals? There is a potential win-win here. You can use the new zoning to implement the general plan and to provide landowners with more flexibility. And that seems to me like it would be a really desirable goal to achieve. To do that, we need to replace Chapter 153. It's much easier to replace it than it is to revise it. There are many details that will come back over from Chapter 153, but you'll have the opportunity for improvement. The commercial setbacks, parking, all those zoning details, including the RV things that we just talked about, right? That will be part of what gets carried over into a replacement. Commercial development standards will come over. Again, there's been some discussion of some of those that could be better. So the opportunity for improvement exists. The starting place for zoning, however, has to be with the map, the definitions of the districts, and the density. And that's where the matrix that you all have in front of you comes in, the new map and the matrix. And I guess that's the last slide. Think about the map, the districts, the density. I know there's some anxiety and some, oh my gosh, we only have a year to replace the subdivision ordinance. But here's the deal. When you don't have any choices, there isn't a lot to discuss. And so the procedure and the notion of having standards, almost all of which are not town standards, but are standards established by some other agency, and the zoning administrator is going to have to check off the box and say, did this go to Southwest Health? Yay or nay? Subdivision part of this is not hard because you have so few choices. What's hard is being able to have the zoning administrator say to a subdivider, you're in District X. District X purpose is to accomplish this. The density of development you are allowed, depending upon how you want to proceed, is this. That's the fundamental question the subdivider is going to have. That's the fundamental question that has to be answered. It has to be answered by zoning under the present circumstances. We no longer have the opportunity or the ability to move that conversation into the subdivision regulations. And so I will conclude and leave on the note of saying that I want you not to worry about the state law. I want you to say, how can we use the zoning to implement the general plan? And then we will take the procedures as they've been written up, probably just the model that's provided by ULCT. We'll hammer those procedures into place. We'll write a reference to all those state standards. Doing the subdivision part of this is no longer difficult. What's important and difficult, more difficult, is to get the zoning right. If you want to stick with the existing zoning, then hey, that's fine. It does not create the win-win possibilities of what I have proposed to you and what we have talked about off and on for months. But that's my statement. is don't worry about complying with SB 174 for the next 6 months. Get the zoning right, and then complying with SB 174 will be routine because you don't have any choices about how to do it anyway. With that, I'm not even going to take questions. I will leave you guys to have your own discussion and wish you all happy holidays.
Thank you, Lee.
Happy holidays.
You too, Lee. Thanks.
Thank you. I will see you all in the new year.
Thank you. Okay. So the next thing is to talk about our moving forward, and I'd like to have a discussion on that. So Nancy, could you start us off?
So I wonder if in light of some of what Lee has said, which I'd love to see his slides because I think they could be helpful, and some of the conversations that have been had about zoning is complicated and changing our zoning is going to be an elaborate process. I feel like we need to have the town council on board with the notion that we are going to proceed to change the zoning, or we are going to recommend making a change in zoning. So I wonder if a first step here, a next step, is to take some suggestion to the town council to say it's our belief that in order to continue to accomplish the general plan in the ways that we have envisioned in the past, given the changes in the state law around subdivisions, that we need to make changes in our zoning in Boulder. And will the town council support, direct the planning commission to proceed in that regard? So I'm looking for town council buy-in to us starting the process to change the zoning. And so that seems to me a pretty critical first step, that they're aware that we're gonna embark on this path.
Okay, so, great, is that it? I'm sorry,
I can make, a suggestion or make it a formal motion to say, I think that's a critical step before we dive deep into taking on this process, that we have buy-in. We don't want to do a whole lot of work and then discover that the town council is not supportive of us doing that.
Great. Can I just hold this at a discussion point before we make any motions? Anybody else?
Thank you for those. Nancy, I think you've got an important point. I think what we need to do is run two things in parallel. I hope we have better communication in the future with the town council so that they don't, we don't have hangups where they get an ordinance change and then they say, what's this about? And in the future, so that's going to be one of my personal goals, is to make sure there's better communication as I move into my new role. But I think we need to have, this is a huge, huge question. I have no objection to what Lee put out. It's a great vision, but I think that, again, it's a question of process, that we need to start very quickly with a community forum. Winter's the time for those, that perhaps as early as January, we have a community forum to get people's ideas about, okay, if we are going to make changes to our zoning, what type of changes do we want to make? Lee's document is a good starting point. It'll provoke some good discussion. But there are some other alternatives. So I think that those two could move forward in parallel. I was amazed. His slides are very close to the ones that I sent Peg in terms of most of the issues. So I think we're both on very much the same page. My feeling is sort of if we come into compliance with the new state law and still have our current zones, we can then continue to work on the zoning part, because I'm just concerned about the timing. And the town council prior wisely has said that it's probably good not to vote on an ordinance change on the same night as the public hearing. That guarantees you 2 months. If they look at the ordinance and have any comments, now we're up to 3 months. So if we're going to have the town council pass what we need to do for coming compliance with state law by the deadline of December, we as a planning commission have about 8 months to get the ordinance language to them. That probably means that, you know, we might have to live with the current zoning and realize that's going to be a second step. But if we can get there, that would be great. I just don't think we're going to be able to do a rewrite of zoning in 8 months. So that, with regard to your remarks, I have some others on kind of following up, but if I want to address your comment first, and yes, get the town council buy-in, but yes, do it in parallel with getting community input, because there's lots of landowners who are going to look at any particular proposal and say, oh my gosh, that's awful for me. I'm going to fight it, no matter what we do. So I think we should get a community forum very quickly.
Okay, any more comments on that? I actually do. It sounds like if we start, that's the beginning. Yeah. If we start the process, and if we start it with a bunch of, you know, I would like to know what your alternatives are, you know, to that. That would be great to know. Lee has presented something, and that has, you know, a lot of flex as to how we do it, but until it's actually explained and we all understand it, it can't really be decided upon or even, you know, gone forward. So I would say that, yes, I would agree that we need to get the town council on board. I would like to say to the town council some general, you know, thoughts on why what we have is not going to help us with our vision in the general plan and what those points are, and just get a list of those going. I will agree that we need to have the town council informed of this, but I also think we need to bring to that discussion also, you know, some description or some idea very, very plainly what we're actually trying to do. I haven't had a chance to see them.
Could bring them up? I'll go through them very quickly. I realize it's getting late.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I mean, alternatives on zoning.
Can you just say a brief? Can you give a brief on this?
It'll be quick. No, it was not distributed to anyone. I did get the peg this afternoon.
Okay,
let me just get the alternatives. So he's given us that matrix.
John, microphone.
He has given us, you know, that matrix. Now, obviously, one alternative always you need to consider is do nothing, keep the current zone. Another one would be to have an approach where the first step to subdivide would be that you apply for rezoning as a different zone than what it is. That's very common, that if somebody's converting ag land to residential, the first step is rezoning. So there are other visions of how you could make that matrix. Lee, give us do you have it? Yeah, perfect, okay. We'll go through that really, really quickly because I realize it is late and we will get this out in writing.
And I just want to know when this came out.
It was created this afternoon at about 2 o'clock.
Okay, so that's great, except for I'm going to say this over again, and I say it at every meeting. That was this afternoon. I haven't had a chance to look at this at all.
Okay.
And I understand this. I'm sorry to interrupt. I agree with Colleen. This is just not something that was on. Let's clear for us to address.
This is an extract from that outline that I gave, which was distributed much earlier.
Okay.
So I simply pulled out because it's very clear when you go back and forth between moving language around and policy questions, I'm highlighting the policy questions. I will be not here, so I'm going to leave them with you.
Great.
So real quickly, the only reason I've been writing this slide, I'm not rambling, and if people could remember what I said. Okay, I'm not as, although Lisa, 90% is determined by the state. He also highlighted the important point. We have to back up the ZA. One of the first decisions we have to make is whether the PC wants to be involved with preliminary application approval.
I think that's a very easy thing for us to get through, okay? We've talked about it already.
Yes, that's right. Nancy raised the question about what's the difference between a preliminary and final application. After a whole bunch of reading, it is really confusing. The state law is very ambiguous. When I looked at other jurisdictions, it goes all over the map. Other municipalities are going to have to come into compliance in January, so we'll have some examples to look at. If an applicant requests conceptual discussion, we have to respond in 15 days. So we have to figure out our procedures for how we can do that. Along that line, we have to decide if we're going to even have a public hearing, because we have to have 10-day notice to give a public hearing.
Okay, John, can we just wait a minute? This is all stuff that we actually had your original to go through. Right. So this is not a discussion. This is just you're just telling us stuff that we have already.
So that's a decision we have to make. Do we are we going to have public hearings on applications or not? If we do, we've got to have a procedure for how we do it very quickly. I think a real key thing, and it's an overarching question, which is right in the line of what Lee had and the whole zoning, is what type of subdivisions do we want? Which really is, as he's put it, it's going to have to be in zoning, not in the subdivision ordinance. But that's an important policy decision. And, you know, are there features we want to ban or encourage? And that comes into what we set as we write our standards. And the rest is kind of a list of items that need to be addressed. I'll just kind of leave them here for discussion in the future. But, you know, the real key that I think people have to keep in mind is that every rule that we apply is going to have to be based on some written document, some code, standard, specification. And we will need clarity on that to be consistent, and we'll be needing to give the zoning administrator clear backup in making these decisions. So it's not just a checklist saying, well, they got a document from Southwest Public Health. What do we do if the document is as ambiguous? It has to be. Did they have to have the perk test? Yes or no? Yeah. If that's our criteria, that's got to be done in writing. So that's all. I'll take time, but I want let's say that I'll leave these. The main point of it is that I have about 25 items on these three pages, mm-hmm. and you've got about 7 or 8 months to resolve them. Which means we have to knock them off at about, or you guys, I won't be here. 2 or 3 of them will off. That's what I'll leave good at.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I was hoping we would come up with some policies on how we were going to move forward, but I think I'm going to let that go till the next meeting. I just want to go through. I just want to go through the end of this meeting. Does anybody else have anything they want to say on this subject before we leave this subject? Okay. The next thing on the agenda is the staff reports. I think Erin has something.
Hi, everyone. Erin Smith. So I've gotten started now in my role as the new zoning administrator, and I've updated some communication elements including the email address, which is now zoning@boulder.utah.gov. And that is also listed on the website. And we've had a few inquiries come through, but nothing ready to move on to the next stage. So as those get a little bit further along, then I will bring them back for us to review. That's it.
Thanks. So 15 days before our meeting, we will know that we have something to review. Okay, great. Peg?
Hello. Goodbye. I want to thank you guys. This has been an amazingly interesting, engaging position to have. So it's kind of nice to sit back and hear the discussion and not have to make the decisions. On the other hand, I feel like I will be unmuzzled after leaving this, and I will be able to actually make some comments. So thank you all very much. I think of all the planning commissions I have served under with in the last 19 years, you guys have been the most, I'm not sure. I mean, I think you're facing the most challenging situation and with the deadlines and so forth. And you are enormously capable and you're going to do a great job.
Peg.
So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peg.
Yes. I have one other thing to say. Thank you. I just want to remind you, just a couple of days ago, I sent out that training, the Utah Land Use Institute.
Yeah.
I just want to reiterate that you're really on your own devices to find your own training sources. There are going to be very few, if any, opportunities to have a live person ever come here again like we used to in the old days, the real old days. Even going over to Wayne County to do a webinar is not typically in the cards. So if you have an opportunity to go to one of those conferences, that's either often in Cedar or St. George, sometimes Salt Lake, one or more people, you know, should take the opportunity. We have it in the budget. Training is in the budget for the Planning Commission. And because what you are dealing with is very detailed, specific, I mean, you need training in a way that's not provided by the municipal officers training. That's more like, what do I do as a town council member? You know, that's important for them. You've got some rudimentary training about what's a planning commissioner, what do I do? Fine, but you have to dig into land use, and that requires very specific training. Your only option is to get online and hunt for the good sources. Mm-hmm. So just keep that flowing to these guys, and if you find a good source, spread the wealth.
Yeah.
Peg, could you send that link again? In the emails the other day, there was no link.
To the land use?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's actually pretty easy to just go to the land use.
You can just,
And you can find all of the different.
Never mind. You don't have to do anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Well, I'm happy to try to compile. I think way back in April, I had a list of some of the training sources. So I can just resend that, and I think I need to add Land Use Institute to that. But yeah, you just have to kind of find your own and dig in. But that had some useful things for zoning. So
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Peg. You've been amazing. 19 years?
Well,
almost.
Yeah,
there you go. So that's a tribute to you for your longevity. And John, thank you for all the time you've been on the PC. I think that we're really looking forward to having some good liaison work for us. So I'm glad that's hopefully going to work out that that's the situation. Do I have any public comments? Dan, hurry up.
Okay, this is Jen Bach again. I have to bring it back to business for just a quick second. So while we were discussing the RV motions on number 4, I wondered, and it's a question, not a comment, if we keep the language about the commercial use of the RV for employee housing on a different property owned by the owner of the business, does that conflict at all with the accessory dwelling units that are permitted already, and then you put an RV on it as well? So does it complicate things? So that was a question I had. Thank you.
Great.
Also,
thank you, Peg, for all of your service.
Yeah. All right, go, Jeff. Go, go, go.
Okay. Yeah, just two quick observations. Thank you, Peg. So I just wanted to say that bringing up enforcement as an excuse to change an ordinance is not acceptable. You know, you should bring up enforcement with the town board when they haven't done that. It's not acceptable to use that as an excuse to change an ordinance, because the ordinance still may be good just because it wasn't enforced. That's a whole separate issue. And so that should be brought up to the town board. And the other thing was, I heard some comments. I heard Delana say it, that she thought it was more important to provide housing than how things look. I want to say that all this is based on our general plan, and also on numerous surveys that we put out to the town and what they'd like to see in Boulder. So I want to say how the town looks is what is important here. That is our most important, because that is the vision statement, and that's from the general plan, and everything should come from that, not the other way around. Anyway, Mark Nelson. Okay.
Thanks, Mark. Okay, upcoming business. do we want to have a meeting after Christmas? A work meeting?
I personally would like to skip one for right now. I mean, I know that we need to do a lot of work, but I'm definitely ready to commit till after the first of the year. That's my own personal opinion.
Okay.
I mean, I think somebody else wants to do it. That, I don't know, whatever. That's my personal opinion. I'd like to get started after the first of the year. You know, if we have enough people here,
Right.
But then we have to decide what we're going to talk about too.
Right.
So,
I mean,
I don't know that we're ready.
Can we sort of spread the issue of roads? I mean, once you get the information together, can you let us know, or do you want to have a work meeting?
Well, Lee said he wasn't going to have anything until after the first of the year.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
You and I will work on something and get it to Lee.
I guess that's one way we could do it now.
Okay. All right. So no work meeting this week or this month. Let's see. So could we,
these work meetings, you were talking about looking in the future, or somebody had that, as far as looking into the future and scheduling so that we could know that we had a work meeting maybe the third Thursday of the month, instead of always kind of going month by month. I mean, I thought that was a great idea as far as looking ahead for the year. I really liked that.
Okay.
And maybe like we have our meetings the second Thursday, our regular meetings, and could we have our work meetings
on the fourth Thursday,
so that we could have like a consistent thing that we knew that we were doing in the future.
Great. Okay, so
that might help.
I support that.
Okay. And do you think it would? Okay. So on our next agenda, hopefully there will be something on roads. And I also would like to set up, as you said, Colleen, the idea of having a schedule of how we're going to go through all of this together. So if Do you and I, can we just have a talk about maybe figuring out that would be great, and we'll have something for the next meeting.
And then are we going to put the matrix memo of Lee's back on?
I would like to discuss how we move all the zoning stuff forward at our next meeting. That's what I would like to do.
Yeah.
You know, specifically what we're going to ask the town council, which will be in February now, since we don't have a meeting until then. So I guess approval for the, you know, moving forward on what we want, and some information about what we want to the town council will need to happen at the next meeting.
In January.
Oh yeah, an open meetings training in January. Anything else?
Well, is that on the agenda as far as us swearing? I mean,
yeah.
Don't you kind of put that in the agenda as far as who new comes in?
Aren't you asking for what we're doing?
Yeah, so this is this is what we're doing in January. This is a business for January.
Yeah. So I don't really swear. I never swore people in. I mean, they just, when they were reappointed, you just acknowledge.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. I don't know if that's an agenda. I can't remember if that was an agenda item.
Yeah, or... welcome new staff or new commissioners. Right. Yeah. And I don't think... I'll have to look it up to be double sure, but I don't think you need to have an election because you can stay on as you've got, it's a 2-year term to stay on as chair, right? I have to look that up.
I think you do have to have it every, I think you have to do it every year. It is every year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So, so you'll have an election for chair.
It's a 2-year term, so you don't have to do it every year.
I need to look that up.
I'm not sure. That's true. That's true.
Whatever it is, I'll communicate with Tina.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so we've got our business. And so now we can adjourn.
Bye.
Until January 11th for our regular meeting. Okay, can I have aye. Everyone ready to adjourn?
Aye.
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 Aye. Everyone. All right. Thanks, everyone. Sorry, Dix. We have
Can I? Yeah. Oh.